Let's see, I forget because Chelsea wasn't in charge of contacting you. Which episodes we were going to talk about. Sorry, we're like just getting started with doing these interviews for this podcast, which is going to hopefully
totally understand.
In the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we're friends. We can just hang and
iterate
as we need to. Okay, so I'm recording this. We'll see how it goes.
Great.
I don't promise to not accidentally delete it when I'm trying to send it to you or something like that. So
it's just a backup.
Phones are complicated for me.
I'm just seeing what episodes.
Yeah, so the set of questions I got were on three things: on the asteroid gong, the chop the moon in half, and the black hole at the center of the Earth.
Right. Just open those. Is there one of those that you feel most confident or interested in that we should start with, you think?
You know, I my expertise is in the black holes, but I haven't finished doing the math yet. So, the others might maybe are more. You know, I can wing it. I understand the physics least of the moon, but I think that might be the most fun.
Okay. Well, once Chelsea gets here, let's just start with the moon, and we'll just do a sort of.
Yeah, or your call. Like, well, yes. And here is Talk of the Devil.
Hello, sorry I'm late.
Good
Hi.
To see you.
No worries. So we've gone through the whole spiel. We can go back and re-record things. When we reach the end of the call, do not hang up right away, please, because we have to wait for everything to upload.
Right.
Otherwise, it gets lost, and that. Really sucks when it happens.
Yeah, I hear you. I will try and restrain myself from doing that.
Okay, thank you. So, Chelsea, we thought we'd sort of talk about the moon a little bit first and just sort of hurdle through a bunch of that.
Sure.
And then switch over to a black hole.
Perfect.
Yeah. And we've got a backup recording. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Let's rumble. I'm gonna hit start recording.
Leia has control of the
I have access to sound effects. I will not use them. All right. 3, 2, 1. We are recording. Great. So
did you tell him also that we can like be edited if you need to stop and
yeah, and I was warning her that I have this blood pressure monitor on that's going to go beep at some point, and I'm going to have to put my hand up and stop. So
great. You're an astronomer, so I assume that you hate the moon.
I hate the moon, yes. The moon is evil because, you know, we complain about how bright all these new satellites are, and, you know, the moon is the brightest satellite of the Earth by far. I mean, there's only one of it, which is good, but it makes us stop ground-based observing of deep, interesting, really faint, deep space stuff for, like, half the month, every month. So, you know, what a pain.
Yeah. So if you could, would you get rid of the moon, like, even with just the snap of your fingers?
The Thanos snap. All right. Gone. I think we need to do some kind of environmental impact statement first.
just
a little
one. That's not how this show works.
Oh, okay. Right. Sorry. The other question is, do you actually need the tides, or are they annoying? And I'm not enough of a maritime guy to know whether, you know, wouldn't it just be better if the water level was more predictable, and, you know, the tide didn't come in and wash all your sandcastles away, and you didn't have to wait for the tide to send your boats out? But I don't know, maybe it has a use. So those are the two things that immediately come to mind of, you know, how life would change if the moon wasn't there.
Yeah,
I'm going to pause you real quick. Jonathan, when you're like leaning into your computer,
I'm sorry, yeah.
You're getting loud enough to clip a little bit. So
I'll sit a bit further back.
Thank you. great. So get rid of the moon. We're doing it. We're not doing an environmental impact statement because we're irresponsible.
I should have worn my mad scientist t-shirt. Yeah.
We're living an irresponsible life. Move fast and break things, as they say. How do we wreck the moon?
That's not a trivial thing. And so the binding energy of the moon, right? The moon is self-gravitating. It's a world, right? And so it's not like you have to hold it together. It holds itself together with its own gravity. And so if you want to break it up, you have to supply enough energy that's more than that binding energy to take... Okay. It's basically you have to take each rock on the moon and push it to escape velocity from the moon.
Okay.
And that's a lot of energy.
Well, so I have a question first, which is maybe a silly question, but do we know what's going on inside the moon? Like, is the moon dry all the way through? Is it dead? Or are we potentially unaware of what's going on deep in the moon?
No, we've looked in detail at this, right? Because, in fact, the Apollo astronauts left seismometers on the lunar surface. And they were looking for moonquakes, and the moon was like boringly dead and not providing any moonquakes. And so they decided after a couple of years, in the spirit of this mad scientist approach, well, let's smash a really big rocket stage into the moon and see how much it vibrates and create our own moonquake. And so the later Apollo missions, their Saturn 4B third stages from the Saturn moon rocket were deliberately smashed into the moon to see what's going on with the, see what happens when you hit it with a really large amount of energy. And the moon, you know, vibrated like a gong, and the seismometers at the various Apollo landing sites picked that up. And so that let you get some kind of probe into the interior structure of the moon. And so we actually, and since then we've done more experiments of that kind. And so we have at least some understanding of the general interior structure of the moon, and it's pretty inert.
Okay. It's just rocks all the way through.
It's rocks all the way down.
So could we then crack it open like a geode?
Well, again, so you could make a big crack in it. That wouldn't, you know, break it apart, because suppose you make a big crack in it, the mass of the moon, again, the gravity wins and seals it back up again.
That's what
happened, by the way, in the early history of the solar system, right? When big asteroids hit the moon and created what we now call the Maria, the seas on the moon, like the Sea of Tranquility, right? They cracked it right open and crap came out and came back down again because of the moon's gravity and filled up the, and then just cooled and made these flat lava plains. But so people have tried that, and it disfigured the moon, but it didn't crack it in two.
So you're telling me that if I had a very large jackhammer and I went to try to sort of just like jackhammer into the moon and create and like get as far down as I could, it really wouldn't. Like, would the jackhammer melt or break, or would it just sort of, like, create a crack, and then how long would it take to fill back in?
Well, that's a good question. I think the time scale, right, for resealing itself, I don't know, I would guess it'd be... not much more than the free fall time scale, right? That it would be pretty immediate, I think.
Oh, that's so quick.
But that doesn't feel right. Yeah, I don't know. So this is where my lack of material science knowledge comes in.
Yeah,
because I guess the thing is, if you've got the force of gravity. I'm sorry?
I think that Chelsea would end up trapped inside the moon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Terrible. I wanted to get rid of the moon, and then I became part of the moon.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's what happens is, but it's, I mean, so you've got, you know, the gravity trying to seal the crack, but then you've got the strength of the rock on either side trying to hold the crack open in some sense. And so what's the time scale for that? So it may not be the free fall time scale. It may be the rock flow time scale, which is a lot longer. So you, mm-hmm. you may have like thousands of years or something. So you may have time to stroll out with no problem.
That's good to know.
It probably depends.
If we're relying on the rock flow time scale, that makes me think that maybe we don't.
Leia, we need you to say that again.
Your whole signal is very blurred, I'm afraid. So
mm-hmm. Give me a second. Sorry, I'll leave the person on the pod.
No, that's bad. Now there's a weird sound. Oh, she's gone.
Uh-oh. And she's back. That looks better.
Am I back?
Yes, much you're better. Back, and you're much better.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear us?
I'm going to text her. We can hear you. And see you.
Oh, now she's frozen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's life in the 21st century.
Always with the technical difficulties, huh?
Yeah. It's okay. I have no immediate pressing other engagements.
Okay, good.
My only other thing today is fielding uh-huh. phone calls from our summer students who are, we've just made offers to. Yeah.
Hey, Leia.
Hey there. Can you hear us now? She's looking like she can't hear us.
I'm texting her. We can see and hear you. She says, hold on. Don't hang up, she says.
I just got okay, my files
yeah,
are finished
we're gonna
uploading.
Finish uploading. I think she's going to hang up for us and then try again.
Got it.
Hi.
Hello
Hi.
There. Ah, she's back.
Yeah, I have recording one. I just wanted to make sure it uploaded.
Okay. You want to start recording again?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear us?
Okay, great. So the idea that it's based on the rock flow time makes me think that maybe instead of smashing it in half, we could just cut it in half, like a big saw.
Yeah, but you have the same ultimate problem, right? Which is, suppose you have two halves of the moon next to one another. Neither of them has escape velocity from the other's gravity well. And
right,
so they're
so
just going
to
glom back together. So the thing is, you need to cut it in half and then immediately fix rocket engines onto the rest of the moon to push the halves apart, basically, so that they're out of each other's hill spheres, each other's gravitational spheres of influence, so that they don't just glom back together again.
What if, though, instead of cutting it, we drill lots and lots of holes? And we drop lots and lots of TNT or whatever,
like
Wile E.
Coyote.
Coyote.
Yeah.
And then explode it.
Right, wouldn't it? But you explode it, right? But still, if you just explode it, but not enough for the pieces to have escape velocity, right? Then what you've got is like a classic sci-fi movie asteroid belt, you know, shower of rocks, right? All feeling each other's gravity. And then you just get a rubble pile asteroid. Right.
So that just makes the moon worse.
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got a big, the world's biggest ball pit. which is not entirely. I see your expression that that's not entirely a bad thing, and could in fact be the whole purpose of this. But if you actually want to get rid of the moon, then you're going to have to basically, for each of these rocks, you're going to have to cart it away from the gravity of the rest of them, and so that comes down to the same issue of what is the binding energy of the moon. Right. Mm-hmm. and so it's GM over R, so it's am I really gonna do this in my head right now?
I'd be very impressed if you
do. Well, it's basically as a function of its rest energy, it's the ratio of its Schwarzschild radius to its actual radius. And so the moon, M moon C squared times about a mil, its Schwarzschild radius is about a millimeter and its actual radius is about 1700 kilometers. So that's 10 to the minus, that's a factor of 10 to the 6. The rest energy is an awful lot, right? So it's 10 to the, I'm guessing 10 to the 21 kilograms, times 10 to the 17 is C squared. So that's 10 to the 38. So the rest energy is what did I just say? I lost myself. 10 to the 38 joules, and then the binding energy is a millionth of that, so 10 to the 32 joules, right? Which, in terms of explosive, since 1 megaton is 10 to the 19 joules, that's 10 to the 13 megatons of TNT.
Do we even have that much TNT?
We don't even have that much thermonuclear weapon. Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. So that is the problem. How do you deliver that much energy to the moon? There is one well-tested way of doing that, and that is to smash it with another similarly sized planet.
Mercury.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so, right, that's how we got the moon in the first place, we think, right? And so really the only way to get rid of a body that big is to smash it really hard with another body that big.
Okay, so we make the anti-moon.
You make the anti-moon.
And we smash it.
And you smash it at high velocity. Right, you don't want low velocity, because if low velocity they just merge and you have an even bigger moon than you started with, which would really suck, right? And so you really need to smash it super fast into the moon to make it, you know, to release that energy. And because it's not so much about just the mass, but it's the kinetic energy that you're delivering into the moon that is going to be turned into heat and velocity and explosive power and things like that. And so you just need to arrange for Mercury or Ceres, even would do nicely, to smash in. Now, of course, you've got to be careful about the angle, because the trouble with this, right, is now you have destroyed the moon. Where are the pieces?
Yeah, so we've got our cosmic slingshot, and we take Mercury or Ceres or whatever and fling it at the moon. Mm-hmm. But we need to do it from our side, right? Otherwise, I mean, very clearly, if we do it from beyond the moon, it will come at us.
Well, but it's not that simple, right? Because the moon is orbiting the Earth, right? So its velocity is sort of transverse onto the Earth. Uh-huh. So now, if you have a sort of hypersonic collision between the moon and another object, what tends to happen is actually if it's sort of inelastic, what happens when two satellites smash into each other at high speeds, basically. Sorry, I have to break.
Thank you.
I'm back. All right, let's try that again. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I don't know how many more times that's going to happen, but so what would we say? Oh yeah, that. So when you have two bodies smash into one another,
I have such bad news that I just realized.
You're not recording.
Are we not recording?
I'm so sorry.
Okay, push record.
I did. We're recording now.
All right, we're gonna go back and start again then.
So we were at.
We started with me asking if I could saw the moon in half.
Okay, let's go back to TNT and Wile E. Coyote, and then we'll get there. I'm so sorry, John.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's always harder to do it the second time, no problem, but yeah.
I know it is. Okay, but so, Leia, you were asking, you know, could you start with, can we cut it in half?
Well, did we get even, should we, right?
We got that.
That was part one, yeah.
Before I disappeared and came back.
Yeah.
My thought is that if we're waiting for just the rock relaxation time, which is a long time, maybe we just cut it in half, big saw.
Right, now you've got two half moons, right, right next to each other, and the problem is that they're within each other's gravity field, and so they don't have escape velocity from each other, and so they're just going to come back together. And they're going to slowly squeeze back together and fuse. And so you end up with the moon just like it was, except there's a nice, like, melted seam. And it might be a bit like if you've seen the equatorial mountain range around Iapetus. Right? Yeah. That might be what happened to Iapetus.
That someone cut it. I love that little moon.
Aliens cut it in half and it squished back together. And now, but there's like a ugly seam where it rejoined.
Yeah.
So we're just going to put a big scar on the moon's face, but the moon's going to be the same when we made a giant saw for nothing.
Yes, I think that's the result of that particular plan. So we need a new plan.
Okay, so what if we mine a bunch of holes, lots of them,
mm-hmm.
all around one, like the equator of the moon, and we drop a ton of TNT down there like we're Wile E. Coyote? Could we make enough of an explosion to blast the moon apart and keep them from... coming back together.
Right. So you've blown the moon into little pieces.
Yes.
But now, these little pieces, right, if you've just put in enough energy to break the chemical bonds of the rock and make it into pieces, they're still again in each other's gravity field. And so what happens is you've made the world's biggest ball pit. The solar system's biggest ball pit, right? You have the rocks come back to each other under gravity, and you've made an enormous rubble pile asteroid.
The biggest, right. Pointiest, worst ball pit ever.
Right, exactly. And so that doesn't cut it. You've got to not only explode it enough to smash it into pieces, you've got to give enough energy to each of those pieces that they each have lunar escape velocity and can go apart from each other and not come back together. And that's a lot more energy.
I mean, do we even have the amount of TNT available to do this?
Well, I don't think so. So let's figure it out. So the total rest energy of the moon, like if you want to, that's
walk through the equation.
Yeah, well, let's do the math because it's fun. Sure. Okay. It's fun. Come on, and it'll be more impressive because the audience don't realize that this is our second go at recording this. So one thing you could imagine doing, right, if you really want to get rid of the moon, just turn it into energy. By smashing it with an anti-moon, right? Okay. And so then the energy involved there, right, is mass of the moon mc squared, right? Famous equation equals mc squared, right? And the total rest energy, the total energy of the moon, when you convert its mass into energy, ends up at about... So the moon's probably about 10 to the 22 kilograms or something like that off the top of my head. And so 10 to the 30 to 10 to the, 10 to the 38 joules of energy, And how much is that? 10 to the 38 joules. Well, 10 to the 19 joules is a megaton of... let's see. 10 to the 15 joules is a megaton of TNT. So I did this wrong last time. 10 to the 15, and so what did I just say? 10 to the 38. So
yeah.
That is another 10 to the 23. It's 10 to the power 23 megatons to turn the moon entirely into energy, right? Or the energy locked up in the moon, say. But if you just want to disintegrate it, release its gravity, yes. and release its gravitational binding energy so that it's not going to come back together. So give it enough energy to send its pieces to infinity, right?
Right.
Then what's the binding...
I'm sorry, but I'm going to start threatening people with that from now on.
What is
pieces to infinity.
Right. Well, that's what we... Yeah, you know, it's like... Yeah, we send your piece to infinity or close to infinity as matters, right? And to do that... So the gravitational potential energy of a body is actually just a fraction of the rest energy that is the fraction of its size compared to the size it would be if it had a black hole. And because the formula for gravitational energy is gm over r, and the formula for a black hole size is gm over c squared. So it's a very simple, and so the Earth's Schwarzschild radius is about 4 millimeters. So the Moon is going to be about 100 times like 40 microns or something, and its actual size, right, is 1738 kilometer radius,
not 40 microns,
and so that's a ratio of, let's see. 10 to the 12, something like that. Let's get it right this time. So 10 to the 3 kilometers, 10 to the 6 meters, 10 to the 12 microns, right? So 10 to, so maybe 10 to the 10. Let's round it up. 10 to the 10 once you get all the factors in. And so instead of, how many megatons did I say? So 10 to the 38 joules, 10 to the 28 joules of binding energy, which is 10 to the 13 megatons. So 10 trillion megatons. So you need 10 trillion 1 megaton thermonuclear bombs to do what you want to do.
Yeah, we don't have that. And I mean, that's like more.
We have too many thermonuclear weapons as it is, but that would just be massively too many. So, yeah. So. I think that's not available in the stockpile right now. Amazon will say that it's out of stock. And so you know, getting that much energy to totally destroy the moon isn't easy. There's one way that we know you can do it that is tried and tested. It's happened lots of times, and that is to hit the moon at high speed with another comparably sized object.
Mercury.
Right, so, yeah, so Mercury would do nicely. Ceres or Pluto would do nicely. We you know, Pluto's, everyone's down on Pluto now, so let's just get rid of Pluto and you smash it into the moon.
No, we love Pluto here.
Oh, okay, well, all right. Yeah. Each to your own.
But if you're going to take out the moon, I will let Pluto die.
Yeah.
We probably want something that we can control enough to send it, like, from Earth towards the moon, right? We don't want to send the moon
right.
It's hurtling back towards us.
That's right. It does matter a bit the direction that you hit the moon. And it's not as straightforward as you think. Because so what we know from smashing satellites into one another is that when you smash two things together at hypersonic velocity, what happens is that a hypersonic shockwave goes through each, reduces it to shrapnel, and the clouds of shrapnel pass through each other pretty much on the trajectories that they were already on.
Ah, okay.
And so what you end up with, in the risk is that what you end up with in this case is this same thing. If you've nicely destroyed the moon, but its fragments are carrying on in lunar orbit, in the orbiting the Earth in the same way they were before.
But we could have like a cool, shiny, spiky ring around the Earth instead of a moon, right?
Well, it would take a while for the moon to recoalesce, yes. So that's right. That's what you would end up with, is a ring that would recoalesce into the moon after some number of
But if we had this
thousands
ring,
of years, yeah.
Would it pose a danger? Like, would there be, would it, there are lots of meteor showers? Would it rain? Just
absolutely, because what you're doing right is for you're shredding the moon. You're leaving it on average in the same orbit, but then you're adding random velocity components to each of the pieces, right? And some of those components are going to send stuff out into the solar system, but some are going to send it to lower perigee orbits, where they can eventually be perturbed and come down and re-enter. And so
and destroy all of our satellites and the space station.
It'll do that first, but then it'll destroy our cities as well, because you'll have like re-entering significant asteroid. I mean, you know, remember that a 1 kilometer asteroid is not good news for life on Earth. Now, admittedly, these would be re-entering at a significantly lower velocity than an asteroid. So instead of coming in from solar orbit, right, they'd be coming in from Earth orbit. And so they'd be sort of order 7 or 8 kilometers a second, instead of 30 kilometers a second. And so, that is, you know, 10 times less energy.
Still not great though.
But still, I mean, still not great. And all that means is you need a 10 times bigger chunk to do the same damage.
Okay. So let's put that aside because, that feels inevitable at this point. let's go back to the astronomers. How rad would astronomy be with no moon?
Right. Yeah, well, the ring the ring would make things worse, right? Because now you've got something that's a significant fraction of the brightness of the moon covering more of the sky all month long. So I'm sorry, you've just made things worse.
Right, but what if we had like a pinball stopper and just like bing, like booped the moon out of our orbit? I mean,
yeah. So now we're not trying to destroy it, we're trying to get rid of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really matter if you get rid of it in one piece or many pieces. and so you basically have to put rocket engines on the moon to move it out of orbit, right? And so that's going to take a while, right? So the orbital velocity of the moon is, I should know this, I feel it's like 1 kilometer a second, but maybe less. Let's see if we can figure that out, and we can edit this part out. So V squared is GM over R, which is, in this case, for the moon. Well, I just claimed that it was a 40 micron thing, and so the relevant number here is
3600 kilometers per hour.
Is that what it is? You've just looked it up. Okay, Google is cheating.
I'm all for cheating.
All right, 3,600 kilometers. I would have got there, honest.
I believe you.
So 3,600 kilometers an hour. And you need to change something from circular velocity to escape velocity. You need to multiply it by the square root of 2. Times 3,600, and so you need to add 1,500 kilometers an hour.
That doesn't seem like that much. Which is
1,500 kilometers an hour is only 400 meters a second. And 400 meters, that's the currency we do rocket maneuvers in, right? Is meters per second.
Yeah.
So 400 meters per second is less than the velocity change you do for a satellite that's going from geostationary transfer orbit to circularize its orbit geostationary. So it's well within the trick is, right, there's the catch, but it's that 400 meters per second is not a large velocity change by rocketry standards. The
sure.
problem is that to get that velocity change, we need to use the rocket equation, which involves the mass of the thing that you are moving, right? Yeah. And the moon is massive. And so how much, so now we have to ask, how much propellant do we need to accelerate the moon to escape velocity, right? And so if we put it in the rocket equation, and we want 400 meters per second, and let's say we're using cool liquid hydrogen, let's use ion engines, because they have a higher specific impulse. Yeah. It'll take longer, but let's use ion engines, mount them, low thrust ion engines in the moon. So maybe you get like 2,000 seconds of specific impulse, which is in, to say it another way, 20 kilometers per second escape velocity of the ions, right? And we only need 0.4 kilometers a second velocity change. And mm-hmm. so 0.4 divided by 20 is 0.02. And using the, and so we need about 2% of the mass of the moon as propellant.
That seems so doable.
I know, right? That's not much, right? Is that basically if you can put a factory on the moon that takes, eats moon rock, and feeds it into ion engines and shoots it out the back, you only need 2% of the mass of the moon, which is, I'm going to cheat and use Google. I don't need to use Google. Let's say 6E24 divided by 81, 7 times 10 to the 22 kilograms. Is the mass of the moon times 0.02, did I say? So that's 10 to the 21, more or less, kilograms, which is 10 to the 18 tons. That is divided by 1E12, a million teratons. I like the unit of teratons, billion tons, because it's a very useful unit of mass for asteroids. And so if I have a million teratons, what's a good asteroid that is a million teratons? Oh, it's bigger than that. Yeah. You do need a world. You need. Like a good trans-Neptunian object would be enough, or one of the bigger moons of Saturn, like Rhea or Iapetus.
So we would need that amount of mass.
Of propellant, yes.
Right. It sounds like what you're saying is that everyone should donate to the White Crane Foundation for getting rid of the moon. And if we get enough billions of dollars, we could potentially get rid of the moon.
We could pretend, yes. I mean, it is. I think that is the most practical thing, is not to destroy the moon, but to accelerate it out of Earth orbit and go have it bother some other planet.
Where should we put it? Should we shove it?
No, not my problem. No. yeah. Well, that's,
exactly.
So now, because the calculation we've done is we've just bopped it out of orbit around the Earth, and it's now in orbit around the Sun, but it's in orbit around the Sun in an orbit very similar to that of the Earth. So it's going to cause problems for the Earth. You've actually increased the chance that the moon will actually hit the Earth, and so that's not great.
And also, you know, not to mention we lose the tides, maybe circadian rhythms get off, animal migration is messed up, the night sky.
But I thought that was your whole point.
Non-astronomer is a discoverer. Yeah, this is an experiment. We're seeing what happens.
Yeah, and so now you need to move it not just out of Earth orbit.
This is fun.
Okay, I'm back. sorry about this. I would have liked to have picked a day when I didn't have interviews, but I don't have a day when I don't have interviews these days. So yeah. Yeah, okay. So where were we? Oh yeah, all right. So now you've got the moon in orbit around the sun, but it's too close to the Earth still. It's in the same orbit as the Earth is. And so you need to actually put it in a different orbit around the sun that doesn't come back and bother the Earth. And the problem is that its orbital velocity around the sun is 30 kilometers a second. And so if you want to, say, chuck it out of the solar system entirely or just get it into the outer solar system where it won't bother anyone we care about, then you need root 2 of 30, of 30, which is about 12 kilometers a second. Right, so instead of 0.4 kilometers a second, you got to add another 12 kilometers a second, and so that is 30 times as much propellant. So now you need 30 yapetuses, to feed your ion engines to get it.
Would
faster.
It be easier to throw it towards the sun and just let it slowly?
No, because if you want it to actually fall into the sun, you've got to kill the full 30 kilometers a second. Right? And this is something that people often mistake about traveling the solar system. It's actually much harder to throw something into the sun than it is to throw something out of the solar system entirely.
Say more about that. Why?
So, well, because... it's this root 2 factor. It's because that the Earth is zipping around the sun sideways at 30 kilometers a second. And so if you want something to fall toward the sun, you've got to kill that 30 kilometers. You've got to go 30 kilometers a second backwards to kill your speed, right? You've got to put the brakes on, right? And that's a lot of speed to lose. Whereas if you want to leave the solar system entirely, you just have to change your circular velocity to escape velocity. And I say, and that's this, you need an extra 40%. And so this is totally true for orbits everywhere. If you are object A orbiting object B, if you want to drop and hit object B, and it doesn't, you can't play games with atmospheres and drag and stuff, it's all vacuum. If you want to hit object B, you have to kill 100% of your speed. If you want to escape from object B entirely, you only need to increase your speed by 40%.
So what you're saying is it's easier for us to get rid of the moon than if we wanted to lasso the moon.
Yes.
And bring it down.
I think that is exactly right. Now, the caveat there is the Earth does have an atmosphere, and so you could do some kind of aerobraking thing, because there's no way that could go wrong.
Okay. I think that's all of our questions on the moon. Should we do you have any thoughts on black hole at the center of the Earth? Should we get into that?
Well, we can get into it a little. Yeah, let's talk about black hole at the center of the Earth. So if I have a black hole in my lab, and it's a little teeny black hole, because, you know, I don't have enough mass to make a big one in the lab, and then it gets loose. Maybe I was holding it with magnetic field and the power went out. And it, of course, is going, I think, to go straight to the center of the Earth. Actually, it's gonna end up bouncing back through the Earth in a linear orbit. Right?
Like, okay. Like so it straight goes, down from your lab to the core and go a little beyond.
All the way to the other side and then back.
Okay.
Right.
We don't even need like a big syringe. We could just
It's gonna just bore through any material that is in its way, I think. Now, but the thing that surprised me is, okay, so it's gonna start accreting, right? So your immediate worry is it's gonna swallow up the Earth. But I may have got the math wrong, but I was just trying to do this before we came on air. So as it tries to accrete rock, the rock gets hot and glows, and gets so hot that the radiation pressure from the glowing rock that it's eating has actually a pressure that's so strong that it pushes the rest of the rock that's trying to fall into it away. And this is a thing called the Eddington Limit. Good old Cambridge astronomer Arthur Eddington came up with this, that if you try and feed a black hole too much, right, it will, the falling in stuff will get so hot that it will push the incoming material away just from the force of radiation pressure. And so that limits how fast you can feed a black hole. And this is a very standard calculation. And for those of us who study quasars, and we're always asking, okay, is this a sub-Eddington or super-Eddington? You can get over the Eddington limit if you play geometry tricks, only feed it through one direction and have stuff come out the other direction. But that's factors of a few, right? In general, the Eddington limit is the maximum rate at which a black hole can grow. And so the question is, okay, suppose you have a black hole that's maybe a kilogram, right, instead of a solar mass, right? What's its growth rate at the Eddington limit? And it turns out, if I've done the math correctly, that it's tiny. It takes multiple Hubble times, or about a Hubble time, actually, no, giga years, so billions of years, to double in size.
Wow.
So we're not going to destroy the Earth.
So we can live with this?
So you could just, you'd just be bouncing back and forth, slowly growing, but not really doing any trouble. If I'm right about that, of course, I could be a million off, because I'd only had one cup of tea by the time I did this. But
still, but even over the course of like a human lifetime, no one would notice.
Right. And it's, you know, if I think about how long it takes for black hole, supermassive black holes to grow in the early universe, right? They are the doubling time is like millions of years at least, and I think everything is just linear in the mass, and so it's probably similar. So I'm going to have to do this calculation more carefully, but my guess is that actually, it's gonna take a while for a black hole to eat the Earth. By a while, I mean even by astronomer standards.
So it's funny, because when I first thought about this, I thought, what if we could make some kind of magic barrier to keep the black hole from fully eating us? But it sounds like it makes its own.
It makes its own. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so this, the radiation pressure is a crazy thing, right? We've used it for like solar sailing, you know, that you make these big sails and the pressure of the sunlight is enough to let you accelerate your spacecraft. And it's still a very experimental technology right now. It's a pretty weak force, but it's there.
Well, now you've given me an idea, because what if it wasn't at the center of the Earth? What if it was off kilter by a bit, and I don't know how we keep it there, but magically, let's just imagine we have the capability to keep it on one side of the Earth. Could we motor Earth around based on this pressure? Would it like make the spin lopsided?
Well, again, the pressure in this tiny black hole, right, is not much, right? So, you know, the black holes start getting really problematic when you make them big. The thing that people don't understand about black holes, right, is you can get fairly close to a black hole without it being a problem at all. If you just have an isolated black hole. So suppose, for example, let's go back to our earlier discussion. Let's turn the moon into a black hole.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Somehow magically, we take out all the equation of state of the rock and have it all just collapse into itself, into a black hole that is, yeah, 50 millimeters.
The mass or the volume of the moon?
Well, we take the moon, right?
Okay. And the literal moon.
The literal moon, the actual moon, and we remove all the pressure inside that's stopping it from collapsing and let gravity win. Right, we switch off rock strength we switch off the electromagnetic force for a bit, let's say, so that gravity is no longer balanced by electromagnetic.
We do have a big switch for that here in the Dead Planet Society.
Good, yeah. Good, yeah, exactly. So now the moon collapses, and it's now 50 microns in radius, 100 microns in diameter.
It's still got the size of a hair.
Yeah, and it's still the mass of the moon, right? It's still got all its mass. It's just it's just a tenth of a millimeter in diameter. And it's orbiting the Earth. Nothing changes. It orbits the Earth just like it did, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great for astronomy because it's now dark. But so maybe this is the solution. And so what happens if you go close to this black hole, right? If you are 2,000 kilometers from the black hole, so further away than the surface of the moon, you would have been outside the moon if the moon were still normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
You won't notice any difference gravitationally. Gravity's right. going to be exactly the same as it would have been if the moon were still there, right?
I mean, except that there's no surface for you to stand on.
Well, that's why I made you a little further out. Yeah, right. You know, but you could orbit the moon if you took, say, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which orbits 100 kilometers above the moon's surface. Black hole eyes the moon, its orbit doesn't change. Well, it does because the moon has these very annoying mass cons, the mass concentrations that make the lunar orbiting spacecraft have to keep adjusting themselves, and you wouldn't have that anymore. You'd have a perfectly symmetric gravitational field.
It'd be a smoother ride.
It'd be a smoother ride, yeah. But you know, that's a second order thing. To first order, the strength of gravity would be the same. You'd just keep orbiting in a circular orbit as if the moon were still there. The thing about black holes...
Sorry, just one second. That would also... The tides should be the same?
The tides would be the same. The tides on Earth would be exactly the same.
Yeah, okay. Right? I like this.
and then... So if you come close to the black hole, and by close, I mean of order 10 times its radius... Right, so now we're talking a centimeter. It's
100 microns across, so let's say I'm trying to grab it.
Yeah, you're trying to grab it with your hand, right? So suppose you try and touch it with your hand, right? So what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that the weird stuff happens at your fingernail, right? Mm-hmm. So as you get close to the event horizon, a little tip of your fingernail gets swallowed by the black hole and never comes out. The next little bit of your cuticle... ages, right, it's got time dilation, it goes into the future basically. So if you pull your hand back, you've got your a bit of your cuticle is now 100 years old or something. Right, and you know, maybe the rest of the fingernail is sort of like the blood circulation in the tip of your finger is off because it's you touched it for a few seconds, but it's experienced a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A minute's not so bad. Right, you can go there, yeah. right. And the rest of your, you know, by the time you get to your knuckle, right, it's like a, you know, fraction of a percent effect. Now that it'd be totally fine. It. Right? No big deal. Sorry?
I'm gonna eat it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so now you're gonna eat it, right? Yeah. What's it going to do to your digestion?
It's going to be a worse day than anyone's ever had.
that's going to be interesting. Well, no, because it will just fall right through you, right? So the time scale for it to come out.
I'll just have a hair width hole in my entire body.
Right, exactly, which will reseal.
That seems fine.
Yeah, I think...
And then I'll be the lady who ate the black hole.
Right, exactly. So I think that works fine. So I think that's the main thing. If I want, you know, people to understand one thing about black holes, it's that they don't, like, reach out from across space and suck you in any more than the Earth does. Right? The Earth has gravity and it reaches out and sucks you in. But the gravity from a black hole when you're far from it is the same as if it were a normal-sized object of the same mass. It's only when you get close that the weird shit happens.
Yeah, that'd be great. Forget putting a black hole at the center of Earth. I could put a black hole at the center of me and maybe barely even notice.
Well, but it wouldn't stay there, right? How are you going to keep it there? Maybe magically. Maybe you have, like, you magnetize. Yeah, because the magnetic field you need to keep it in place would be enough to do bad things to you. So, we're going to have to use magic to keep it in there. But, but yeah, I think... I think if it were a small black hole, really small, but I mean, now we're not talking like a moon-sized one, right? Because if I turn the moon into a black hole, right? So now it's let's say it's a tenth of a millimeter across, right? And you eat it, you've put on some weight.
Yeah, it's pretty massive.
Yeah, you know.
And so
yes, nothing magic happened, but you still have the gravity of the moon inside you, and so you are going to collapse just from that gravity, and be a thin smear of strawberry jam on the outside of this that's then swallowed slowly by this black hole. So I do not recommend it.
This sounds pretty bad to me. I had one other idea earlier that I wanted to ask. When you were talking about dropping the black hole and it oscillating back and forth,
mm-hmm.
It seems like that would be great for energy production.
So how do you extract that energy? let's see. So you've got a... Now we're talking like a little one... like a 1 kilogram black hole, not a moon-sized black hole,
yeah,
right? Just a very low mass. So there's not a lot of kinetic energy in it, right?
Mm.
That's basically the same order of energy as taking a satellite in orbit and dropping it onto the Earth, right?
Mm.
And so that's a safer way to turn kinetic energy into heat. I'm not convinced. Now what there is a really good way of getting energy from black holes, if you have a proper black hole, by which I mean one that's the mass of the sun,
mm-hmm.
and you spin it really fast,
right?
Because then you have to use the energy to spin it up. If you find one that's already spinning, so it already has the energy, you can extract that energy. There's a thing called the Penrose process, named after Roger Penrose at Oxford, everyone knows about the event horizon of the black hole, the point of no return,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a thing called the ergosphere, which is a slightly larger region where if you go in that region but not in the event horizon, you can come out again, and you can come out with a little more energy than you went in. If you go the right direction, because you can extract spin energy from the black hole. So the black hole ends up spinning a little slower, and you end up with more energy. And so there are schemes where you can use that to extract energy from the black hole. And in fact, we think this may be part of what powers the jets in active galactic nuclei and things like that. So there are, in principle, ways that you can extract energy from a black hole other than just waiting for the Hawking radiation to glow at you, which is going to take a while. Or you can just let nature do it, right? Which is you can find an active galactic nucleus where you have a billion solar mass black hole and that's spinning and you're feeding it with gas from the galaxy and you know 90% of the gas falls down the black hole, but 10% gets squirted out in a particle beam at 99.99% the speed of light. And in these things, you get a jet that is, again, it's traveling at basically the speed of light with a mass flow of an Earth mass per year.
Whoa, I didn't realize it was that big.
Yeah, all in positrons and electrons.
Those are very useful particles.
Right, and so you basically have a ray gun that can destroy whole galaxies. So I think that would appeal to you guys.
Absolutely. That does appeal to me. Coming next season.
All right, yeah. Wonderful. I think we've asked you... This has been so fun, Jonathan. Thank you so much. And I think we've got what we need. So what we're going to do here is... we're going to record sort of the intro to these conversations, talk to more people, cut together the, you know, demos and stuff. If we have any questions as we go through that we need to clarify, we'll just shoot you a quick email.
And then I think the goal right now is for the whole series to come out over the summer. So okay, we've got a ways to go. But we will let you know as we get closer, you know, how these shape up.
Sounds fabulous.
And so it looks like all the files are uploaded.
Yeah, what was the thing we didn't cover? We did black holes, we did...
We didn't cover Asteroid Gong.
Oh, Asteroid Gong, yeah, okay, fine. Well,
that's
yeah,
fine. Yeah.
I mean, it's actually a lot of overlap with the moon.
In the
sense of, you know, hitting big things really hard, and it doesn't go how you want.
Or does it?
Or does it, yeah, well, right.
Yeah. So if you could send me the backup that you recorded on your phone.
Oh, right, which I should stop recording now, yes.
Through, WeTransfer or Dropbox.